Hey, good morning. This is Jamie from Stonemaier Games, and I'm here as I am on usually on Wednesday to discuss Stonemaier Games news, to share some random topics, and to answer any questions that you may have about what's going on at Stonemaier Games this week. I'll start off with the chocolate of today. What will be my chocolate of the day? I've been enjoying, so I've kind of gotten hooked on a local chocolate place called Cacao. I pick up their chocolate at the Tower Grove Farmers Market here in St. Louis on Saturday mornings, and they have, what do they call it? It's like, it's essentially a chocolate bar, but it's bark. It's chocolate bark, and it's so good. It's not visible if you go there. If you go to the stand, you have to kind of ask for it because they keep it in a cooler on these hot summer days, but it is such good chocolate. It is so good. I highly recommend it. So that is my chocolate of the day. What is your treat of the day? I do think I need to, I eat a fair amount of sweets, but I also have a pretty balanced diet. I'm pretty active, but I did go to the doctor this week, and apparently my cholesterol is still a little higher than it should be. So I need to probably cut back on the chocolate of the day a little bit, and a little bit of butter and things like that. But otherwise I do a lot of things that are actually pretty good for cholesterol, and so I'm a little surprised that the results came back so high. So if you have any tips for reducing cholesterol in a natural way based on your lifestyle and what you eat, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that, because I would like to not have to worry about that for the rest of my life. Carlos has a question right off the bat here, joining Tony and Chad here in the comments. Carlos says, I heard that Rob Davio came up with the idea of legacy board games from an exercise of asking what assumptions do players have about board games and then trying to challenge them. Have you ever done an exercise like that? Seems like a fun thing to do at least once. You know, I didn't know that about, I've heard Rob talk about the legacy concept many, many times. I thought he came up with it inspired by Dungeons and Dragons, but it's really cool to hear that it came up at first from this question about asking about assumptions. I haven't done that exercise, but that is a really cool exercise, and I think I might try that, Carlos. That is a really neat exercise to pursue. Yeah, great question. Tim is here today. Tim isn't always able to join us for these live feeds anymore, but Tim, it's good to hear you, good to see you. Dusty, back from Gen Con, he says, thanks for making it possible for so many of us ambassadors to attend Gen Con with MeepleSource. Yeah, I want to give a huge thank you to Dusty and I think the 38 different volunteers, plus Cynthia and Chris at MeepleSource for providing such an amazing presence for Stonemaier Games at Gen Con this year. We only had one employee of Stonemaier Games at Gen Con. That was Alex. Alex was there to take meetings. Actually, Susanna was there too. Alex and Susanna were both there. Knowing that we were in such good hands with MeepleSource at their booth, and Darian, who led the amazing volunteer team, Mihir, the co-designer of Viticulture World, Dusty from the Mill, so many amazing people were there to share our games and share the love of our games and include people in the Stonemaier Games world. And it really, this morning, Cynthia from MeepleSource shared a video that she put together of kind of a split video showing photos and images of them putting together the booth and people coming by the booth and coming by the events and then cleaning up. And I put it on the Stonemaier Games Facebook page, this very page that you're on right now. Check it out. I highly recommend it. I'll put a link in the YouTube version of this video, because it's just, it just made me happy to see. You can see it's bringing tears in my eyes right now just thinking about it, because it's a really, really special video, and I am so grateful for everyone for being there. Those big conventions definitely aren't my forte, and so I am very happy to know that our brand and our products and our worlds are in good hands with Chris and Cynthia and Darian and all the people who help out at the convention. So I don't know. I could go on and on about it, but watch the video. I highly recommend it. It's only about 6 minutes long. And it's really, if you're a Stonemaier Games fan, it's really heartwarming. And if you're not, it shows you what Gen Con is like and what it's like to set up a booth at Gen Con and run a booth. It's a pretty incredible feat. Chet says, high cholesterol is usually from eating too much red meat, which I haven't eaten in 3 years now. Chad's right. Yeah, that's one of the key sources of it. So that has been a little surprising for me. Tim says that he had a great time at Gen Con too. He says he prefers the more relaxed Geekway to the West. Yeah, Gen Con is so much more of kind of a spectacle. Yeah, that's the word I use to describe it. Whereas Geekway is just a great way to sit down and play a bunch of games with people for a few days, an extended game day, game night event. I prefer Geek as an attendee. I prefer Geekway. That's more my style, and still a lot of people for me, but I do enjoy it. Tony says he's super intrigued by Turing Machine based on the Gen Con post that I've seen. I'll be watching for the retail release. Yeah, I'm curious when people, Tony and others, if you paid attention to the games that were announced or demoed at Gen Con, what were the ones that really excited you or intrigued you? I know I didn't know much about. I knew Elizabeth was designing a game based on the Fox Experiment, and now the announcement came out that the game is actually called the Fox Experiment, and it looks fascinating. This is Elizabeth Hargrave, designer of Wingspan. I always love to see what she's creating because she is an absolutely incredible designer. So I'm really excited about that one. That one might be the game that I learned about at Gen Con that was the most exciting to me. I also saw a video on Man vs. Meeple today about a game called what was it, like the Big Split or something like that. It's a multiplayer I cut, you choose game where everyone's cutting and choosing simultaneously with all other players at the table. And it's from Horrible Guild, which I believe is the company that made The King's Dilemma, a game that I absolutely love. So I'm really curious about that game. I just heard about it today. And another game that I think a lot of people are discovering for the first time, it's still very new, is Cat in the Box. I pre-ordered my copy 2 months ago now at this point, and I think it is arriving today. So I'm really excited to get my copy of Cat in the Box. Tim says, have I played Picture Perfect? He says, we did last night. Glad they have some new expansions, including one with Sherlock Holmes, since some members of the party are a little shady. I did get to play that at Geekway, actually, Tim. Yeah, I really enjoyed my play of Picture Perfect. It's a game where you are positioning guests at a dinner party in such a way that, based on kind of arbitrary rules, like different guests want to be next to different people or positioned around the table in certain ways or not seen or seen, and you're just creating this little dinner scene based on these deductive rules. Really neat game, really different game. Carol says she played so many games at Gen Con, really enjoyed Seas of Havoc and Moonrakers. Love Moonrakers. I haven't played Seas of Havoc yet. What was your favorite thing about that one, Carol? Tim says there are also new expansions for Role Player Adventures. Excited about the Fox Experiment. Genway says I got to try the Fox Experiment as well. It was a fun one. Also got to take a peek at the Nesting Box. I can't wait. Yeah, we had an early copy of the Nesting Box, essentially a final version of it, but without Wingspan Asia inside because we haven't revealed all the Wingspan Asia stuff yet. But we had that at Gen Con. Glad people got to check that out there. Andrew says that he's really looking forward to Hoplomachus Victorum from Chip Theory Games. The gameplay and production quality both look really good. And George is popping in from Poland. He's in Poland right now. Hope you're doing it. That's where Jakub Rozalski, the creator of the 1920 plus world, is from. Dawn said that she picked up Cat in the Box at Origins. Oh, you got a really early copy, Dawn. I'm jealous of that. Actually, that's how I got to play it early because I had some friends who attended Origins and got it there. Jonathan says that Planet Unknown is the game I really wanted to get to see, but it sold out so fast at Gen Con. Planet Unknown is a really, really great game. I have a friend who has a copy, fortunately. So, although I haven't played it in a long time, I need to get that back to the table. Jean-Pierre says, when you have time, enjoy this documentary about the way that fax is working. What is fax? Yeah, I'll have to check that out. I don't know the context for this, Jean-Pierre. Feel free to provide a little bit more context, but I can't tell if it's just a random video that you're sharing, or if it's related to Stillmire Games or gaming in general, or it might be just something that you're excited about. That's fine too. Chad says, I never did ask, what did you think about Blake Crouch's new book, Upgrade? Yeah, I finished Upgrade a couple books ago. Really enjoyed it. Blake Crouch is just such an entertaining writer. Really enjoyed that book. And then I read Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow after that, which is not a sci-fi or fantasy book like most of the books that I read, but it's kind of a tale of two people who are designing video games. Fiction. It's a novel, and I highly recommend it. It's beautifully written. Not really the type of book that I can give spoilers about, but it's about a game design and a relationship between two people and other people too. And it's heartwarming, it's heartbreaking, really, really beautifully written book. Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow. Get the chance to try that out. YX Tan says, interested to hear reviews of the Netflix and eBay games. I'm not familiar with those games. Are those games based on Netflix and eBay? I don't even know what an eBay game would be. Yeah, let me know what you're talking about there. I did hear about something like Netflix is putting together some sort of game, streaming game, but eBay is new to me. I definitely never heard of an eBay game. Chris said that he enjoyed Get On Board from ILO, Yellow. And Zhenwei said Evergreen and Gartenbau were also sold out fast. Yeah, I wouldn't. So it's great for a game to sell out at Gen Con. Publishers can only ship so many games and can only stock so many games at Gen Con. So, yeah, I'm saying this because a game selling out fast does not necessarily mean that people that it is a hot game necessarily. Just means they didn't have enough for the number of people who wanted it. But I'm glad to hear these names of games. Evergreen, Gartenbau. I think I've heard of Gartenbau. I haven't heard of Evergreen. Terracotta Army. This is one that was actually pitched to us. I played an early copy of that on Tabletop Simulator, and I was very curious to see what they created. It ended up not being a great fit for us, but I thought it was a pretty interesting game with some good mechanisms. Shenwei says, which conventions do I plan on going to? I pretty much only go to two conventions. One, I go to Geekway to the West here in St. Louis, and I go to our own little mini convention, Stillmire Games Design Day, in October every year. So those are pretty much just the two that I focus on. I'm not really a convention person. I'm not really a person for big crowds. I kind of like smaller, more intimate settings, and it's not a part of the Stillmire Games marketing strategy, which makes me even more grateful that MeepleSource is willing to run the Stillmire Games presence at Gen Con. Andrew mentioned Starship Captains. I did see some cool photos of that one. Christopher says, what are your thoughts on campaign books compared to tiles? Do I have a personal preference over one or the other and why? I would say I have a heavy preference for the books. I love the book in Sleeping Gods. I haven't played any of the series from Plaid Hat Games, but they're storybook games where you have like the map on one page and the rules and the text that you're reading on the other page. Actually, I have played one of them. I played Forgotten Waters. That's kind of that format. And I greatly enjoyed Gloomhaven Jaws of the Lion so much more than Gloomhaven, partially for that reason. I think the innovation of using books instead of tiles that you have to go through and find is so much more player friendly. I mean, I think it is a player focused decision. Feel free to disagree. For those of you who prefer tiles, I know there's a tactile nature to them. Perhaps there's some fun in kind of assembling each scenario. But I love the books. I think the books work great. And I think a great innovation to the books that Gloomhaven implemented and that Tidal Blades, not Tidal Blades, the Tidal Blades sequel is implementing is that you sometimes combine multiple books to form that layout for the current scenario. I think that's brilliant. Carol mentioned Seas of Havoc. She says it used the pirate theme so well with the mechanism. You use worker placement on an island to get goods and build your deck. Then you use your cards in the shop phase to attack other ships and find treasure. So some worker placement, deck building, and shooting cannons. Sounds a little bit like Dead Reckoning, but also I'm sure it's a completely different game. Darian says the eBay game is a free game they were handing out. Okay. I haven't heard anything about that one. Brian says, how do you store play mats? Do you use them? I was shown this on Twitter yesterday and picked it up. Oh, this is a great link. A vinyl storage organizer. I don't have many play mats. What do I have? I have the Wingspan play mats, which will lay flat in the new, or they are laying flat in my nesting box. We're working on a Red Rising play mat. There is a Scythe play mat that I actually don't, and I owned it temporarily, but then I was like, I don't want to store this giant tube. I'm happy with the game board. And there's also the Tapestry play mat that we're working on. So I don't have a great storage solution. I kind of keep them in the tubes that they came in. I'm looking at one over here, the Tapestry one. But I don't have a great solution for it. So for those who really love it, I think this solution that you mentioned here is really clever. Lots of comments today. Okay, I'm a little bit behind on comments. Just a great conversation in the comments if you're paying attention to what was going on at Gen Con, talking about the eBay game. Games based on Squid Games and Stranger Things and Ozark. Janeway points out that some companies had problems with pallets arriving on time. My heart goes out to any company that suffered from that, where they were hoping to have something show up on time and it didn't quite show up. That's rough. Carol recommended Ready Set, or recommends Ready Set Bet as a big group fun game. Those are great to have at conventions. Ready Set Bet. Okay, let's see. Richard says, are Design Day tickets available? If not, when are they? Richard, Design Day tickets went on sale a couple months ago. We sell them first to past attendees and then next to people who signed up for back in stock notifications. So if you want to be on that list for the future, just sign up for a back in stock notification. I doubt we will have more in stock for Design Day this year. I think it is really sold out for real. But in the future, that'll get you on the list for the future if you sign up for a back in stock notification. I think we sold out. Normally, if we still haven't sold out, then we put it on the e-newsletter. But this year, we sold out even before we got to that point, due to, in large part, the back in stock notifications. Yeah. Josh said, thanks for having autographed cards at Gen Con at the MeepleSource booth. Yeah, that was fun to do. It takes me a couple hours to sign a couple hundred cards, but I'm glad they were there. I heard that people had fun receiving those cards that they brought up Scythe near the Stonemaier / MeepleSource booth. So that was great to hear. George says, did the wine crates sell out at Gen Con? I don't know if they sold out, but I heard that they were quite popular. I think we had around 300 of them there. And Alex said they were a big attraction. So I don't know if they were actually, if they sold out. Maybe if someone from Gen Con is here can answer that and let us know. Chad says, I see many games implement replayability in different ways. Some use variability in the setup of the game, while others add variability into card draws from a deck. What would you say is your favorite way to design replayability into a game? I would say asymmetry is one of them, especially in asymmetric pairings, like in Scythe, where you pair a faction mat with a player mat. That way you have, you know, five of each in the core game, but they combine together to form, I think, around 25 combinations. I think that is a great way to offer replayability. Card draw is another one. That's one of the reasons I love some sort of randomness in the card draw in a game, because it can lead to... opposed to like a perfect information game, because it just leads instantly to replayability, to different paths that you can go on as you're playing. Those are probably the two biggest ones. I don't like to ask players to do too much during setup. I like to keep that as streamlined as possible for like kind of the variability reasons. Like, there are games that I think go over the top on in variability, where they're setting up, they have you set up like dozens of tokens and tiles and things like that on the board that just takes a lot of time. And so I like to manage that a little bit. I don't mind a little bit of variability during setup, but I like to be pretty quick if possible. Yeah. Justin joins us and he says, I've been designing a game recently with his girlfriend and we've been having a ton of fun figuring out how we want it to work. Do you prefer starting out with only a few mechanisms and building up, or starting out with a lot of ideas and trimming the fat? I kind of go back and forth. Like, it depends on where I am during the process. Usually I start out a little bit too streamlined and then I add too much and I have to cut it back. I don't know if that's my preference or just my natural design style, but yeah, usually I think part of the reason I start off pretty streamlined too is that I want to see if the core mechanisms of the game can work before I invest a ton of time in designing a ton of unique elements for it, like a ton of different cards, a bunch of different abilities and, you know, asymmetric elements, things like that. So I just want to test those core elements too. And it's often very simple at that point. And then I add those layers of replayability, variability, as Chad just mentioned, as I design. And sometimes I end up having to cut that back down as I realize that players are having to remember too much on their turns, or turns are taking too long, things like that. So yeah, I often start off fairly simply and go from there as I'm working on the foundation of the game. Dusty says, MeepleSource ran out of Tuscany and Oceania. They did ship a few wine crates back, sold through most of them though. Okay, that's awesome. That's great to hear. Thanks, Dusty, for chiming in about that. Jeff says that Nacho Pile from Pandasaurus is a press your luck game in the same vein as Uno for Schadenfreude. Fun, silly family game comes in a potato chip bag with chip tokens. I do love Press Your Luck, or Push Your Luck, so it's a good recommendation. Thank you, Jeff. Johnny says, the Meeple Source got me good, and I didn't complain once. I was happy to buy so many items from your games. The amount of meeples for Wingspan was amazing. That's a Meeple Source thing, not a Stonemaier thing, but I'm glad you enjoyed those meeples. He says he had to choose five, but I could have bought all of them. The big box art was beautiful for sure. Thank you, Johnny, for sharing that. And yeah, MeepleSaurus, I think they do an incredible job with their unique tokens. That's completely independent of Stonemaier Games, but it's always neat to see what they create with those unique birds. Mike says that he picked up the signed Scythe card at MeepleSaurus, met Alex, and played games with Susanna. Oh, that's awesome, Mike, that you got to play some games with Susanna. She is the best. Shani says, would you ever consider veering out of the general 1-6 player count in future releases or other common parameters you follow if you have the right game? Probably not. Our parameters are technically 1-5, and we only really ask designers to design 2-5, and we take care of the Automa solo mode, or the Automa factory technically takes care of that. But yeah, the submissions on our guidelines on our submission page are there for a reason. Those are the games that we're trying to make, that we specialize in, and that we want to bring to life. There's so many other game publishers out there. So if you have a game that you love and it only plays at 2 players, that's great. There are publishers that make 2-player-only games. Stonemaier Games just isn't one of them. So with the sheer volume of submissions and possibilities for what we could make, I think some constraints are really important. And it's somewhat arbitrary, for sure, but I think it's arbitrary for a reason. It helps us filter down the games to the things that that we're known for and that I think we're pretty good at. So it's helpful for us and hopefully helpful for designers to see, hey, my game doesn't fit into these guidelines. I'll seek another publisher because there are lots of great publishers out there. Jeff says that Evergreen is really beautiful. Same designer as Photosynthesis. Jeff also mentioned Longshot the Dice Game. I played that. I really enjoyed Longshot the Dice Game. Jerry says, question about the Frogmouth fan pack entry on BoardGameGeek. I think it's my great, but my understanding is that it was never fully approved. Yeah, it was never actually approved at all. Any fan creations are just that. We love them. They're fan creations. A fan created them for one of our games, and they're welcome to, you know, share them as long as they make it very clear on the cards themselves that they are fan creations. And Jared brings up something important here, that we do ask those fan creations that they not use the official, definitely not the official art and not the official graphic design from Wingspan either, because A, it can be confusing, and B, and definitely not the fonts either, because we have to pay for those font licenses, and there can be some pretty big legal issues with those font licenses. And C, those icons are things that we create, and we haven't given people permission to use them. We do let people use the card templates for fan creations. We do offer those, but we intentionally do not put the icons on those templates. Or really, it's anything that's on those templates you can use, but beyond that, it's not okay. Jared says, the author decided not to proceed because it would have become too time-consuming. If the project remains a prototype forever, should the BGG entry be deleted? Yeah, I don't really think that any fan creation should have a BGG entry. I think it's confusing for people. They confuse it with a real thing that was that's an official Stonemaier thing approved by Elizabeth, designed by Elizabeth. So yeah, I don't think that belongs on BoardGameGeek. I'm not saying that I don't appreciate the Frogmouth pack and any other fan-made creation that fans want to share. I see tons of cool card creations on the Wingspan Facebook page in particular. But I think it is important to have a delineation between a fan-made thing that they're sharing just because they love a game versus something that's officially posted on BoardGameGeek, which I think people can see and think, oh, like, why did I miss out on that? Did I not get it? Like, is this official? Is it not? But I can say that you will find Frogmouths in Stonemaier Games expansions. I think there are a few already in one of the expansions, the Oceania expansion, and you'll probably see some more in the future as well. Shaked says, how much of a wine connoisseur are you? Not much of one at all. Even though I designed a winemaking game, it was based on research, not necessarily out of a love for wine. He says, would you be interested in a bottle made at my father's vineyard here in Israel? I mean, I would be honored to receive a bottle received from your father's vineyard. Even though I don't drink much wine, I love to share it with friends. I love to have a little sip every now and then. I would be honored by that. That's very kind of you to think of me in that way. Speaking of which, I have all these topics that I haven't covered today because you all are asking so many fun questions. Actually, let me show you something. I had one visual today. One thing that I showed on my Rolling Realms live play on Friday, Saturday, Sunday last week is I showed another promo realm. the Honey Buzz promo realm for Rolling Realms. So this will be one of the upcoming realms. This is printed. This is on its way to fulfillment centers, but I don't know exactly when we will release it. But I did share it, and so I wanted to share it with you today. Honeybuzz realm for Rolling Realms. Really excited about that. And also, Shaked's question reminded me that I hosted a little dinner and game night with some friends this past weekend. I made a curry dish, kind of a Japanese curry dish, and we played Everdell. These are friends that love Ark Nova, and so I thought I'd introduce them to Everdell as well, which has some similarities. Very different games, but lots of cute animals in the game. And I also played other things I played recently. I played Skull King and Fantasy Realms at a game night last week that I hosted. And at a game night I attended last night, I played Architects of the West Kingdom, one of my favorite games, or my favorite game, I think, from Garpil Games. I love Architects of the West Kingdom. Other things that have been going on, I was on a podcast called the Mental Mages Podcast last week. That episode is not live yet, but feel free to check out the Mental Mages Podcast. I had a great time chatting with the two women who run that podcast last week. Also went to the farmer's market, played some disc golf this weekend, kind of had a busy weekend. And recent video I did last week's Sunday video was about scaling in cooperative games, like it, kind of the different ways that you can scale difficulty in cooperative games. My blog post on Monday was about a different type of infographic that I've been testing to convey what a game is all about and whether or not you might be interested in a game or a product from Stillmire Games. And also talked about, on Thursday, I mentioned three things that other companies are doing that I think are really cool. I'll mention them briefly here, but feel free to check out the blog post. Far Off Games, Far Off Games did a charity auction last week on BoardGameGeek, kind of in the vein of the Stillmire Games charity auction. I thought that was really cool to see. I mentioned the showdowns in the Moonrakers Titan Kickstarter campaign that's happening right now. And after we played that game of Skull King game night last week, I thought it was really neat that the company that makes Skull King is called Grandpa Bex Games. And Grandpa Beck's phone number is in the rulebook there for you to call or text if you have any questions while you're playing the game, which I think is incredible. That's just a special level of customer service that I think was really cool. Scott popped in to say, he's glad to say that he says, I'm glad I got to meet you at Gen Con, at a Gen Con, not this past Gen Con. I got to meet Scott, who created many of the realistic resources that that we used to make, that now Top Shelf Gamer makes. I met Scott, it's probably 2016 or 2017. And Scott is just a wonderful person. He lives here in St. Louis, but I got to meet him at Gen Con for the first time. Yeah, I'm glad I got to meet you there too, Scott. And that's the one thing I miss, I think, about not attending Gen Con, that I get to miss out on meeting pretty incredible people. Hopefully I still get to connect with many of those people online, but or at the Design Day or at Geekway to the West. But there are a lot of people who attend Gen Con, so it's a more of a chance to meet more people there. Near says, what non-Stillmire game can you think of that works equally well at both higher and lower player counts? In my opinion, it's pretty rare. I think some of the games that do it best are games with very short turns, like Architects of the West Kingdom that I just played last night. I think that works really well at different player counts. Isle of Cats, I think, scales well down to two, but also up to four. Any simultaneous games where you're drafting, like Planet Unknown, we mentioned that earlier, that's a simultaneous game. I think that scales well. Seven Wonders scales well down to three, but not down to two. That's what Seven Wonders Duel is for. Solken, I think, plays pretty well at two. It scales well down. I'm just looking at my collection now at this point of game. Oh, Everdell. I think Everdell scales well down to two players as well. Let me know in the comments. That's a great question for anyone following along here. What are some games that you think scale well down to two or even one and scale well up to like four, five, six players? Hopefully there's some Stillmire games in that list too, because I think we designed all of our games for that purpose, to scale well down to two and then up to at least five players. Shenwei says, when will the Nesting Box be available? Yeah, we have this on our website. The Nesting Box and Wingspan Asia will be available at the same time, in early Q4 2022. So we'll probably do the, like, I think we're probably aiming for the announcement and the reveal in early October, and then do the pre-order and shipping in November. That's what we're currently aiming for based on the state of production and freight shipping. Chad says, I could tell you thought thoroughly or thoroughly thought about the design of the nesting box. Very nicely done. I particularly like the hidden birds within. Yeah, there are lots of, I mean, lots of little details went into creating that box. And it was one of the first products in a long time that I've worked on somewhat publicly. And so you can see kind of the evolution of it in the posts that are on the nesting box page on our website. You have to expand it to see, but if you scroll all the way down to the bottom, you can see what it was and the feedback that I got from people and how that evolved and changed things over time. It was a really great process to go through publicly for people who love Wingspan and want a box that can really hold all their Wingspan stuff. Mark, you had a good point here. Mark brings up fan creation, fan realms for rolling realms. I am okay with fans using the icons for rolling realms. I think because one of the reasons for that, Mark, is I kind of provided them publicly fairly early on what those icons are. So it's totally fine to do that. Just make sure you put on the card somewhere that it is a fan creation, just so no one is ever confused when they see that card image out of context, whether that it's an official or an unofficial game. Because I think some people like you, Mark, are able to create some really beautiful looking fan promo realms. So don't go back and revise everything unless it doesn't say on the card already that it is a fan created realm. Or you can say not an official Stillmire Games realm, that type of thing. Just on the card itself, I think can really help. Tony says that red wine is good for lowering cholesterol. Maybe I need to start drinking more red wine for that purpose. Shaquette says, did you see the new Garpale Games, new solo only game? I did not see that, no. No, I didn't see that. That's pretty cool. Paul says he picked up the Scythe Encounters deck. Do you suggest blending them into the base encounters or could I just use them by themselves? Either way, I think one fun way to play the encounters is that like the first few times you play with them, only play with them, so that way you guarantee that all players are drawing the new encounters, and then after that you can just shuffle them in with the rest of the cards. And some players do keep them separate permanently because they are a little more outlandish than the original encounters. You'll see what I mean once you start playing with them. So some players do like to play only with them or only without them. I shuffle all of mine together because I think they're more. I just like having a big deck of encounter cards that way. Let's see here. Lots of comments today. Let me see if I'm missing it. Oh, I should have led with this. Today is Scythe's birthday. Scythe's original retail release was on October 10th, or I'm sorry, August 10th, 2016. So Scythe turned 6 today. Congratulations. Oh, well, thank you. Not congratulations, but thank you to all of you who have supported and played Scythe over the years. It's been an amazing journey to be a part of the Scythe creation process with Jakub Rozalski and all the other designers who helped out, Kai Stark, the Morton of the with Altama Factory, Ryan with The Rise of Fenris. It's been an incredible journey with Scythe. We continue to support the game, even though we're not making new stuff for Scythe. And just incredible that Scythe is still bringing joy to people 6 years after the original retail release. So if I don't know if that's a motivating factor for you to bring Scythe to the table this weekend or this week, but if you want to celebrate Scythe's birthday, feel free to do that. I'm going to post about that in the Scythe Facebook group. I got to write that down to remember to do that. But yeah, happy birthday to Scythe today. Carol says that one of the best parts of Gen Con for her was meeting so many people face to face that she had only previously met virtually. And that's I could totally relate to that, Carol. Christopher says, I was wondering if you could provide a peek behind the curtain when it comes to board game designers. Does Stillmire Games seek out game designs from highly rated game designers, or do the game designers go through the same submission process as everyone else through the Stillmire Games website? Yeah, everyone goes through the same process. When we seek out designers, it's pretty rare, but when we seek out designers, I'm much more interested in designers who have not already made a name for themselves, who are maybe just starting out that I've seen great things from. Whether it's a fan creation, like I mentioned Kai and Ryan a minute ago, like they weren't designers before that. They were just fans who created cool stuff for games, for Scythe in particular. But yeah, I think I'm generally more elevating and more interested in elevating people who have not already had a voice in the game industry. opposed to those who have. That said, if a highly acclaimed game designer that I love reaches out to me and says, "Hey, I have a game that I think would be a great fit for Stonemaier Games," I'm certainly intrigued. I still want them to go through the same submission process as everyone else, but I'll often check in to see what they actually submitted to see if it intrigues me, whereas Alan usually is the only one to see that stage of the submission process. I'm actually meeting with Alan today to play a game that was submitted to us. So I'm looking forward to that, doing that with him this afternoon. Carol says that Underwater Cities, Castles of Burgundy, Spirit Island, Viticulture Scythe, and Libertalia all scale great at different player counts. That's great to hear. Meeple House Games is popping in to join us today. Thanks for joining us. I think Meeple House Games, you posted recently. What did you post very recently? You posted a review just the other day. Let me see if I can remember what it was. Yeah, I'm not remembering right now, but I know you just posted a review of something related to Stonemaier Games. Yeah, this is Josh that I got to meet at Geekway of the West recently. Josh posted a blog post about that meeting at Meeple. Maybe that's what I'm thinking of, about our the games that we played at Geekway, and that was fun to see. Dune says he thinks Dune Imperium. Near says that he thinks Dune Imperium scales at different player counts. I haven't actually played Dune Imperium at 2 yet. I've heard the bot is fine, but I think I'd rather play at 3 and 5, 3 and 4 players without the bot. Chad says, "Did you notice that Blake Crouch put a lot of Stonemaier adjacent things in the upgrade book? I remember that the Stonemaier game, the St. Louis Arch and Scythe was in the book. I found that interesting." Yeah, it was kind of. I did notice that he prominently used the term Scythe throughout the book in reference to something other than the game. Scythe is also just a cool word, so it could have been a coincidence. But it would be awesome to hear if Blake Crouch is actually a gamer or is aware of Stonemaier games. That would be really cool. Molly's here. Hey, Molly. Molly says, "I think Concordia Venus scales great. There are plenty of map sizes included, which is a great way to scale." Totally, yeah. Using maps to scale different maps, or clever maps like in Kemet, where everything is pretty much equidistant to everything else, is a great way to scale a game as well. Shen Wei says, "Oh, the Legacy of Yu. I think it's coming to Kickstarter within the week." I'm missing the reference for that now, but I think I have heard the Legacy of Yu. Looks interesting. I'll come back to comments in a second. Let's see. I showed the promo realm. Also been doing a lot of playtesting for a product that I've been working on recently. I think that's all the Stonemaier Games news. Okay, I can just focus on comments for the rest of the time. Oh, I meant to show the nesting box. Let me go get the nesting box real quick. Meant to have this prop available because I can now actually show this thing because people have seen it at Gen Con. So I will show you the nesting box. So one important thing to keep in mind as you see this is a very difficult part of production of a product when you have a top and a bottom that meet like this is that it is really tough to get the alignment of the top and the bottom. We did our best, but please, and I would say this is the bird that's the most off, the crow over here. Please be aware of that as you buy the nesting box, that the alignment probably will not be 100% perfect. We tried to get it as close as possible, but it is not. We're not able to get it exactly to match up the top and the bottom. So go into the box knowing that. We're not going to replace box lids because all the box lids and the box tops are going to, like, that's just the way they are. There isn't a better fit than the one you receive. So if you think that will bother you to the point that you don't want to buy the nesting box as a result, please don't buy it. If you're okay with that, get it because it's pretty awesome. This is the top of the nesting box here. We have an eagle on the bottom. America. Yeah, that is the Wingspan box. I was very excited to showcase that for the first time at Gen Con to show the whole thing. And now you can see the whole image on our website as well on the nesting box page. Jerry says that Senate Magazine did a feature on Andrew Bosley and his art in the latest issue. Andrew showcased the different box art covers he did for the Tapestry-based game, but he said he doesn't recall the reason that led to the final box art being chosen. Do you remember what went into that final decision? It's been a long time. It usually comes down to like which one I just aesthetically like the best and that I think represents the game the best. And I think that's why I chose the top, the one that I ended up choosing. I think it also had the actual tapestry featured fairly prominently on it. I like the background of it. Yeah, it's just kind of a composition thing. I thought the composition worked best for it. I don't remember the specifics though. I don't even remember the other options, so I probably have them on my computer somewhere. JB says that he started the puzzle, the Birds of Prey puzzle, the 1500 piece wingspan puzzle a month ago. He says, "I now reach the phase where I'm left with the white and blue background shade pieces. Challenging and very fun." That's great that you've been working on it. I'm glad you've been having fun with it, and it is a big challenge. We tried to make that background pretty simple. Not simple, not like easy simple, but not having variation in the colors and shades to make it a challenge, basically. A challenge of simplicity. Andrew says, "I know you mentioned it before, but when is the Stillmire anniversary? I know it's coming up." Yes, Andrew, thank you for asking about that. The Stillmire anniversary month will start on August 31st and will continue all through September. We have a number of surprises for that month that are planned for you to kind of celebrate 10 years of Stillmire Games, 10 years of you hopefully finding joy in our products and being welcomed into the Stillmire Games world and universe. Can't wait next month. So we're a couple weeks away from it at this point. I should probably mention it every week leading up to it. So I'm glad, Andrew, that you prompted me. But yeah, August 31st is the day when all of that stuff will be revealed. And actually, a little bit of it might be revealed to champions a few days before that. Josh says, "When interacting with your audience, how do you promote and generate participation?" Two things. It really comes down to two things for me, Josh. One is I try to ask questions. You can see that a lot in my blog post. I end almost every single blog post with a question to invite conversation. And two, if you actually have the honor, if I have the honor and the pleasure of having comments on a post, that I acknowledge them and that I reply to a lot of them. I don't always reply to every comment, but if someone has a question in particular, I try to reply to it. And by doing so, you show people that you are not just posting something and forgetting it, that you are still there actively participating yourself. Those are two big things. I think those two assume that people are reading the post or watching the video, whatever the content is, listening to the podcast. The other level of it is putting it out there for people to know about it, for people to be aware that the content exists in the first place. And so I think some of the ways to do that are share it in pl places where you think people might be interested in knowing about it. Both posting it on your own social media, but also going to various Facebook groups, for example, that are interested in that specific topic, and posting it there, and also in the post, including a question to encourage participation right off the bat. I think I've seen the podcast. One of my friends, Jake, runs a podcast called Decision Space, and I think he's done a really good job of posting links to new podcast episodes in various places on Facebook, in particular, to encourage participation and to encourage people to listen to the episodes and participate. Yeah. JB says, "Did I complete any Wingspan puzzle?" I did not. No. Megan has completed all of them multiple times, but I have not myself completed them. Tony says he's re recently saw an interview with Errol Ottis, an old school TSR game artist, where he was asked if he retained any of the original art prints of his artwork for the various AD&D products for which it was used. Do you happen to own any original art prints of any of the artwork for Stillmire Games products? A lot of it is digital art, so a lot of it doesn't even have an original. But I do have a little bit because Wingspan illustrators Anna and Natalia have been very kind to send me one bird, one original illustration per game per expansion. And so I now have four of these birds on the wall. I'm going to reveal the fourth one pretty soon because it's for Wingspan Asia. But I have the cover birds for the base game and the European expansion. And then we have a Tui, I believe, for Oceania because Megan and I went to New Zealand right before the pandemic. We saw a bunch of Tuis there, and we were honored to have that on our wall. So those are all original. Those aren't prints. Those are the original illustrations because Anna and Natalia work by hand, painstakingly. They spend, I think, upwards of 10 hours at least on each illustration before they scan it and kind of touch it up in Photoshop or Illustrator and then send it to us. I do have also a gift from Jakob. I have two giant Scythe art prints on my wall, but they're not original because Scythe is digital art. Yeah. YX10 says that they completed The Rise of Fenris and wished that the campaign was longer. Any plans for an epic story-driven campaign similar to Madara or Uthia? See, I actually like that you said that. I'm glad that you wanted to be longer. That's what I want. I would rather a campaign end when you're wanting more rather than drag on too long. So I kind of think that we hit the sweet spot there if we're making you if you want more out of it. And hopefully it still felt epic to you. I think that's the key. I still want it to feel epic. 8 games of any game, I think is a pretty epic journey to go on by itself. Charterstone is a 12-game campaign, so Charterstone is a little bit longer. I wouldn't say that I'm all that interested in campaign games that are much longer than that, though, because I think that's a big commitment to ask for people to play when they have a lot of other games to play, one-off games and campaign games. Yeah, I have some articles about campaign games and videos about campaign games and what I think is the ideal length. And I think for me, it caps out around like I will gladly play a campaign that goes down to 5 games. But for a campaign game that I make, I think 15 would be the max, but probably closer to 10. I do have a game that I'm working on that does something a little bit different with a campaign format where it'll make sense when I explain it, but it's essentially as big as any of these campaign games that you're talking about, but in a way that isn't necessarily asking players to play through a series of games, X number of games to get the full experience of the game. Very vague there. I'll talk about it more when I can make more sense of it. Mark says, is a print and play type of game a good entry point for designing board games? I think it depends on what you're aiming for. I think it's a decent way to get your work out there in the world if you want people to experience it and play it and maybe offer you some feedback. And I think it's certainly accessible for a lot of people who, at least people who are happy to print and play a game. I experimented with it a little bit with Rolling Realms originally. You might recall it was just a single piece of paper that you printed. But the intent there was that it was easy to print because I could play it with other people, or other people could play it with me live in real time. So I think that was kind of a nice perk of having that as a print and play format originally when I was designing it. So yeah, I think it depends on your design intentions, your goals there as well. If you're trying to make it a at least part of the goal is to have income from it, I don't think print and play is a good method for that. But if you're trying to get feedback, try to get something out there in the world, get eyes on it, I think print and play can be a decent way, especially if you're already active in a print and play community. Ivan says, have I watched The Sandman? No, we've had some friends raving about it. I have read the graphic novels, but I have not watched the series yet on Netflix. Currently, we're finishing up the Orville, Orville season 3, which is fantastic. We're watching The Bear on Hulu. We're also watching Reservation Dogs on Hulu. We're watching Only Murders in the Building on Hulu. A lot of these are week to week, so we're only watching them when they're available. And I think our next nighttime show will either probably be The Sandman or will be Westworld, the latest season of Westworld, because we haven't watched any of those episodes yet. Catching up to comments now about the nesting box. Shani says, "When do you expect the Wingspan nesting box? What do I expect the Wingspan nesting box with all the current and upcoming expansions will weigh?" With everything in it, it's gonna be pretty heavy. Like I have a previous. So this one's pretty. I mean, this is heavy by itself, and this doesn't even have anything inside of it other than the inserts. What does it have inside of it? I'm gonna open this non-spoiler. Yeah, okay. It has just the bird feeder in there. That comes with the nesting box, and it has here's the punch board that had the separator tiles on it. Those are now in the box. But even by itself, it's pretty heavy. With all the stuff inside of it, including all the future stuff, maybe 20 pounds. Seems like a lot. Maybe 15 pounds. It's gonna be pretty heavy. Yeah, I don't know if it'll be. I mean, it is technically a size that you could put into a bag and carry it somewhere, but I think it will be mostly used to pull off your shelf and put it on the table at your own game night when you host. Because it's so heavy. It will be so heavy. Yeah. Nathan says, how far does the nesting box extend out the front of a standard Kallax? So my Kallax shelf is about an inch or two off the back of the wall, and it juts out by another, I don't know, maybe 3 inches. It's designed to store like this in a Kallax shelf. You can turn it sideways, but I wouldn't necessarily recommend it. That kind of defeats the purpose of having certain components lay flat, like the neoprene mats. But yeah, it fits in a Kallax shelf really nicely in this orientation, in the horizontal orientation. Molly says she likes the bird choices featured on the nesting box. Thank you, Molly. Yeah, we chose these birds to represent each of the different continents and regions that we're going to cover in the expansions and that are already covered. Yes, there is a penguin on there. Yeah, thank you. We put a lot of thought into that. And the artist, because artists haven't even started to work on some of these expansions yet, they had to get ahead of themselves and make the birds in advance for each of these different continents. Jerry says, regarding the nesting box, did you consider other options where the birds do not overlap between the base and cover that might have avoided the alignment issue? We did, Jerry. Yeah, we definitely did. And that is a good and smart solution to consider, I think, in general. That you could have had a smaller bird down here, maybe another bird up here. But we really wanted big birds on the box. And so we decided to just go for it and do our best at aligning the birds. Patrick says, do the various boxes fit inside the nesting box for wingspan? Let's see. So, Patrick, all wingspan content fits inside the nesting box, but not the boxes for the games themselves. Like, this box replaces the other boxes. That would be a huge box to contain the boxes of the original games. I think that's what you're asking there. Do the various boxes fit inside the nesting box? Yeah, no, they definitely don't fit the boxes. But we do have a guide here printed inside the lid itself to show you where everything goes inside the nesting box, where you put all the different components and things like that. So, yeah, we have a little handy guide to show you where things go inside the box, so you don't need to reference someplace else. And I think it's pretty intuitive as to where things go, especially thanks to that guide. Chad says he's super sore right now from updating his bathroom, demo and tiling the floor, replacing the toilet, vanity, sink. How handy are you around the apartment? What's the biggest home improvement project that you've tackled? It's a fun question, Chad. I'm not very handy, that's for sure. I relied heavily on my dad for that. It makes me miss him every time I see something in my condo, in our condo that he improved, and every time I see something that could be better. I don't even know if I have any really big projects. I've tightened screws here and there, but I'm not very handy at all. I can't even think of anything in our current home that I did much of it. Even Megan, enjoys, or at least is okay with, like, assembling furniture. I don't enjoy that process, and so I'm happy for her to do it. So I think even some of the furniture that we have assembled in our place, most of it was assembled by Megan. Yeah. Molly says that she has an art print as well, and it's her favorite art piece. Which illustration do you have from Scythe there, Molly? Oh, Chad says that playing The Rise of Fenris twice plays very differently. There are different paths. There are a few different split paths you can take, and just playing with different factions can lead to very different results in The Rise of Fenris, amongst all the other variability in Scythe already. So that's great to hear, Chad, that you had a different experience each time you played. Chris, we're talking about campaign games now. Chris says, too many games in a campaign can be weary. Yeah, it can really be a detractor for me. If I hear that a campaign game has over... For me, I mean, even if it's over 15 games, but especially if they're advertising 20 games, 30 games, I'm like, I'm never going to play 30 games of any game. There are very few games other than, like, Rolling Realms and maybe Terra Mystica that I've played 30 games of. And that's over, except for Rolling Realms, that's over many, many years. The one exception I can think of is My City, because My City had games that were so fast. There were 20-minute games. And so we played, the 20 to 24 games of My City. And a couple weekends, it flew by, and that was awesome. But if you have a game that we're set up and take and tear down and learning the rules and playing the game, each session takes longer than 20, 30 minutes, and it's a super long campaign, I won't buy it in the first place because I know that I won't get through the campaign. Chris says, we ended up playing about 12 games in Clank Legacy, and we were quite burned out towards the end. 8 to 10 games feels right most of the time. And I know, Chris, I hear you. I think I'm very similar to you. I did a poll about this a while ago on the blog, not even that long ago, a couple months ago, to see what the current state of campaign games is, and got some good feedback from people about what people are wanting right now. And I found that sweet spot is probably in the 10 to 15 range, I think, it was what most people are looking for at this point in time. Yeah, but I can definitely hear that burnout. I love Clank Legacy, but I didn't want it to be extended. I was happy for it to wrap up. I was happy to want more at the end rather than wanting less or wanting it to be over. Tony says, "Have I checked out Prey on Hulu?" Yes, we did watch Prey this past weekend, and really, I really loved it. I thought it was a beautifully shot movie. I did a review of it on my jamiestegmaier.com blog a couple days ago. And Tony said, points out that the main characters are Native Americans, Comanche Indians, Comanche Native Americans, I'm sorry, or French trappers. Not familiar with the term French trappers. And the movie offers the ability to watch the movie with both of their languages replacing English. The movie itself was very good. Yeah, I heard that, and we tried to watch the movie. It's on Hulu here in the US. Trying to watch the movie in Comanche, but found that it was dubbed. I thought they had filmed each scene in both English and Comanche, but they hadn't. I think it was dubbed later, maybe by the same actors, but it was definitely dubbed. And so we decided to watch it in English instead. But I love that they did that. And someday, it's such a beautiful movie that I might rewatch it someday and rewatch it in that language. Ivan recommends The Sandman and thinks it has potential to be a great board game. Nier says, "What's the best campaign game that I've ever played?" What is the latest game that I would say for that? So I have a video about this. Let me look at what past Jamie said about that. I just saw, looks like All Aboard, I just went to my YouTube feed. All Aboard Board Games just posted their review of the Viticulture World expansion, if you want to check that out. Okay, campaign games. Got to focus here. What are my favorite campaign games right now? I had the list a few years ago. I made it a few years ago, then I updated it 1 year ago. And I don't think I've played many campaign games since then, maybe just My City. At the top of the list, I'm going to guess without looking that I think my favorite was The King's Dilemma. And I think Clank Legacy was up there too. Let's see what I said. Clank Legacy. I put Clank Legacy at the top, then Sleeping Gods. This must have been before I played The King's Dilemma. Because I really do love The King's Dilemma. But yeah, I put Clank Legacy at the top, and then Sleeping Gods, and then The Rise of Queensdale. Those are some of my favorite campaign games. I'll post the video in the link below, or the comments below. Where can I find the link? Here we go. Oh, I'm almost out of time here today. Yeah, let's see if we have any other questions before I wrap up. Okay, let me skim through just looking for questions real quick. Mihai says, "What advice do I have for when you find that a mechanism that you designed is similar to something already used, but not exactly the same, and your theme is different and the mechanism fits perfectly?" I say, run with it, go with it. Make it your own for sure, but I almost every mechanism is some iteration of another version of that mechanism that already exists. So yeah, run with it. Make it your own. Make it unique. Make it innovative, or at least make it memorable. But yeah, I think that's totally fine. To learn from other game designs and make it your own. Yeah. Molly says, "I have the ladies playing badminton and having a tea party with a mech on the lawn." Oh, I love those illustrations from Scythe. She says, "Every part of it means something to me, the mech being board games. I've ordered three random signed cards and gotten the two, three, and four combat cards, and I want to put them all in the frame." Oh, that's awesome that somehow all the random cards you've gotten across all the games and even multiple different types of signed cards in Scythe have all somehow been combat cards. Ooh, Carol got to try the new Clank Catacombs, which I pre-ordered the other day. The new mechanisms of building the board and using lock picks to get rewards was really cool, but we can't justify having another Clank game since we have all the expansions for the base game and also have Legacy. Yeah, it is a lot. I'm happy with everything that I have for Clank for replaying it many, many times, but I'm also intrigued by Clank Catacombs, so I did pre-order it. Patrick says, "I think the trick to enjoying a longer legacy game is finding a group that can stay together for a while and playing just two or three games in a session." That definitely does help when you can play multiple games in a session. And for me, I found that it's super helpful to have campaign games. In fact, I will not buy a campaign game if it does not play well at two, because I think the greatest chance that I have of getting through a campaign game and enjoying it is playing it with Megan. And so for any campaign game that I'm interested in, I talk to Megan about it, I see if she's interested, and then I buy it. Without that, Nier also mentioned Role Player Adventures. Yes, that was before I made the list. Yeah, let's see. Games I played after filming this list include My City, The King's Dilemma, Role Player Adventures, and The Adventures of Robin Hood. I don't know if All of those would have made the top 10, but I really enjoyed all four of those. I mean, it's a good, yeah, actually looking at the list now, I can see those maybe bumping off the bottom four. Those are really good games. Not, and they might even be slotted up top. Role Player Adventures, I loved, one of the best campaign games I've ever played. I have a full like 45-minute video about how much I loved it and all the different mechanisms and things I loved about it. That might be in the top spot. The King's Dilemma is also absolutely amazing. Yeah, that's tough. These are good games on this list. Actually, don't even know if I mentioned here. Did I mention the there's a yeah, I didn't mention it anywhere here in the comments about the what is the game? What's the dice game? I'll think about it later. What I put it on here. The I'm totally blanking on it. Can't remember it, but I'll think of it in a second. There's a little mini campaign expansion for a game that I love, and I'm blanking on the name of the game. It's a game where you're rolling dice and everybody gets the benefit from the dice. It doesn't have dice in the name. Megan, are you here? No, Megan's not here. Okay, Megan would know what it is. Sean says, my voice is going deep every so often. Yeah, I think because I'm parched. I'm a little thirsty. Mark, I've not played Wild Serengeti, no, and I've not played Brazil Imperium either. But Simon, it sounds like I need to. I think you've mentioned that a few times. Hilda says that she's going to play Robin Hood, or just picked up Robin Hood. Oh, here's Megan. What is the dice game that we always play with Adam and Mel that we love? Space Base. Space Base. The expansion is Space Base. Thank you, Carol. Carol got it too. All right, Megan's here, so I'm here. I'm gonna go eat lunch. Thank you so much for joining me today for this chat. Lots of great comments, great discussion about Gen Con. Great to hear from all of you, and I will see you next Wednesday for more fun. Yeah, I don't think I have anything special to reveal next Wednesday, but I'll just be here to talk to you again for another hour. I'll see you then. Bye.